Sorry. Council President Cardoza. Councilmember Jones.
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Wanderhaar.
Here.
Councilmember McPherson.
Here.
Mayor's here.
Here. Okay, we'll start with the introduction. This introductory memo from Michael Borzek.
Thank you, Council. As indicated, this is our annual Board of Correction meeting, as allowed by Idaho State Code. As a point of agenda, we have no tax deeds for this year. Our water supply balances, for those of everybody's been on this board before, last year we had 1,147 million gallons of canal water pumped. This year it was increased to 1,332 with the 400 extra homes we built in this last year. Potable water used, for some of you that may remember, in the past years we've gone as many as 330 million gallons. Last year it's down to 2.4 million gallons. The canal water delivered was 1,339 million gallons last year, and we only wasted 6.8 million gallons over 68 million of 2015. We served approximately 5,700 connections at 0.72 acre feet per connection. Per this Board of Correction meeting, this is a time for council members and protestants, members of the community, to protest any assessments or errors in the assessment roll or record. This year we have one protestant scheduled, Mr. Dave Schblatt, and we don't have anybody other than that. I will stand for questions.
Okay, questions for Mike. I think he kind of went over items 1, 3, and 4, so. I see you've done a lot better job this year. It looks like we're really getting down our water wasted and the amount of potable water that we're using, and I know that's a lot to do with management and the way this system all works now, so we certainly appreciate that. It's always disappointing to see water going down the ditch that doesn't get used, so I'm very pleased that we've dropped that down so much. So. Okay, so we have the scheduled protestant, Dave Spletz. I guess we're going to run this just like a public hearing. So is there any comment from staff to begin with? I think Mr. Spletz has brought some maps for us to view that are not included in the packet.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rutz. I did provide a memorandum for your review, a summary of the history of this. So if you have any questions on that, we'll answer those. Otherwise, I think if we let Mr. Splett go, and then I'll reserve for rebuttal.
Okay. Richard, I forget. Do we need to do this, open up a public hearing, or is this just a formality that we just do?
Formality.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mr. Splatz, you may have the floor. If you would just state your name and address for the record, thank you.
The normal procedure?
Yeah.
You know, you laugh because I've done this. Sorry, Dave Splatz, 970 Ashwood Court. It's funny that you say it because I've done this job on 5 continents now, and everyone starts exactly the same way, even if I couldn't understand the language. If Chris could put the first...
We have a one behind you there.
Okay,
we can look at.
This is a copy of the assessor's map of my property, the yellow line they have drawn. You can see the brown slot through my backyard, which is the Mora Wasteland. The second slide, Chris. No, you went past, there you go. The assessor reviewed and visited my property at someone else's request and identified that the Mora Wasteway was actually wasteland. And they identified that at 0.16 acres, which I'll show you in a subsequent slide. And I have no argument with your general approach that the city and the board uses to estimate water use on residential acreage. I just perceive that this board didn't understand or didn't know that that 7,000 square foot is equivalent to a normal single family lot. So I'm actually paying for water. And as you just said, you don't want to pour water down the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The assessor said the residential portion of my lot is the 0.429 acres, or about 90,000 square feet. Okay. I have 7 points for you to consider. I already explained the first one, that the ordinance could not have foreseen that my lot would be off by 7,000 square feet. Item two came from a focus group of people who actually have 7,000 square foot lots. And they realized they were paying 70-some dollars a month, a year, to water their yard, and I'm paying $27 a year to pour it down the ditch. So that one doesn't affect me, but it is one of the issues for you to consider. The third one, what was the third one? Oh, the third one I've brought this up to mayors in the past, but of course mayors in the past aren't the board, so I have to bring it to the board to get a consensus to reduce or recalculate my assessment. Could you go to the next slide, please, Chris? Okay, you can see this is a copy of the assessor's assessment of my property. The fourth point, then, is a similar to the first one, is that your ordinance bases water use on residential acreage, and the assessor says I have 0.4 some acres. So that's what I'd like you to do. The fifth point is that the assessor said that I have 0.19 acres of wasteland and has no value. I perceive that either it's not wasteland and I should pay to irrigate it, or it is wasteland and I should not pay to irrigate it. The sixth one I don't have any paperwork for because there's no paperwork yet. And you probably got a kick out of this one. But the Kuna Meridian Irrigation District wants to purchase an easement from me. Chris, will you go back to the first slide, please? Wants to purchase an easement through the ditch. They do not have one. Although I don't have a formal offer from them yet, I perceive that if they were here and I asked them to come, that they would rather purchase wasteland with no value rather than irrigatable residential land that's equivalent to a single family lot. And the seventh point is that I feel silly pouring water down the ditch, as we just heard from our mayor. That's the end of my brief presentation. Can you go to the last slide, please? Yes, second last. So what I'm asking for then is not to be charged for anything except the residential portion of my lot, so I don't feel silly pouring water down the ditch. It's only about $27 a year, something, so it doesn't have any impact on the city. That's the end of my presentation, I said for the second time.
Okay, questions for Mr. Splatz?
Actually, it's Dr. Splatz, but Dave's fine.
Oh, Dave, okay.
Well, I worked hard for that.
Yeah. Yes, Richard.
David, do you have a fence between you and that ditch, or is your fence on the other side of the ditch?
I do not have a fence.
There's not a fence.
I'd go broke. It's the property is 6/10 of an acre, and I'd go broke fencing it.
Okay.
But it's tall brush they have to burn every year, water down the middle of it, and waste rocks that whoever built the subdivision next to me dumped in there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything further?
I guess I have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
So currently, you said there's no easement on that extra, the portion of property?
That's right.
So it's totally exclusively in your control?
They could probably, yes.
Okay.
They could probably claim that they had a prescriptive easement for part of it, but they have not made such a claim. And there is no title report that states that there is.
Okay.
But they do want to purchase one. And as you know, or maybe you don't know, maybe the whole room doesn't know, when you purchase a permanent easement, it's probably 95% of the value of the underlying property.
Okay.
Because I would still own it and pay taxes and irrigate it, but I would not have it for my own personal use, just as I do not have it for my personal use now. The side slopes are one-to-one, so it's not, you can't cut it, you can't walk on it, you can't do anything with it. But it is pleasant because I do have frogs and red-winged blackbirds and snakes and neighbors' cats. In fact, if you remember about 5-7 years ago when that mountain lion was found roaming in Cuna, it was in that ditch behind my house. My neighbors all have it fenced off, but I don't. Well, all but one of my neighbors have it fenced off. You can't use it for anything, and I don't have the dogs. Thank you.
So you have a wildlife preserve, is what you're saying.
Yeah, which is a real problem, because I want to burn it, but I don't want to remove the cattails, because there's red-winged blackbirds in there and everything, you know. So
yeah.
I bust my butt weed whacking it all the time, which is a pain in the butt, because it's on one-on-one slope, and I'm not 13 years old anymore, or even 30, or even 50.
Okay.
Further question.
Yes.
One question for Dave. Have you been given any instructions that forbid you from irrigating it if you wanted to?
What do you mean, sir?
Well, if you decided to go ahead and irrigate it so it turns green, so you don't have to burn it every year, I mean, are you not allowed to do that?
Well, I don't know how I would burn it, because it's got. I don't know how I use it, because, like I said, it's got one-to-one slopes and there's all kinds of rocks in there. And there's no way you could walk on it or use the lawnmower or anything.
So the whole area that you're showing is actually the canal, and the whole from
canal
top of the banks of the canal.
And the banks.
So there's no footing outside of the bank, couple feet going this way, couple feet going that way.
No, the assessor sends somebody out there with a GPS unit, and then one of the slides that you have in your thing is the assessment they came up with. And I said that's what the thing is.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Are you contemplating, Mr. Splatt, are you contemplating selling the easement to the Kena Meridian Irrigation District?
I don't have an offer.
Would you give it to them for free?
Would I give it to them for free?
Correct.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
They've already discussed an offer, or one of their staff was, and it wasn't for free, so no one's asked me to donate it for free. But if such an option came up, I would certainly consider it being civic-minded. Is that a better answer? I didn't walk over there and say, here's your easement.
Yeah. Okay, anything further for Mr. Rowe? Or for Dave, sorry.
Maybe one more thing. Dave, did your neighbors have fences in between their house and the canals?
All but one.
So all your other neighbors have split up, put a fence in between, so the canal is behind their fence?
Yes. It's just that my property, as you can remember, is 300 feet.
Yeah.
And you know, at $20 a square foot, a linear foot, I go broke.
No, I understand. I just was curious what your other neighbors were doing.
Yes, all but two. In fact, the person on the other side of me is those three large horse properties on Sharp Lane, and they all have also. So nobody uses it.
Okay.
And there's not even a footpath there or anything like that. It's just junk. And I had once contemplated actually giving it away as a green belt, you know, for you guys as a path, but I don't own enough to do any good. And Dr. Nelson was mayor then and said that that might come up in the future. And then right after that is when the irrigation company started talking, which I would expect you folks to try to work with them. If they do try for the easement, then you could work out some cross thing with the path. But then, of course, then I have to build a fence.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think that's it. Thank you. Mr. Roats.
Thank you again, Mayor, Council. Again, for the record, Richard Roats. Let me just summarize real quick and emphasize the importance of what we have to do when they set the assessment method, and it has to be uniform. That's required by state code. So unfortunately, we can't pick things out and say, you know, this applies to this and not to this. What the city has done is set a base of 10,000 square feet, and then above that adds an additional amount for the square footage. In that 10,000 square foot calculation, there's an assumption made that a certain portion of that is going to be impervious, and that's built into that factor. Just about every year you adopt a resolution, last year's is included in the packet, where we implement that assessment and the cost. I'll then just briefly touch upon Mr. Splett's point here that he's making dealing with the waste and the documents that he provided. The Ada County Assessor categorized that section as waste. That comes from the Idaho Administrative Code State Tax Commission, Section 19, which is the secondary category. Waste, it applies to public rights of way, including roads, ditches, and canals. That's what it's limited to. I spoke then with Mr. Don Watt today from the assessor's office, and essentially there was a request to have this categorized as waste, and under their categorizing of it being waste, the person, the property owner, has to be denied use of that property. In this case, I would submit that maybe Mr. Splett probably is not denied use of that, maybe not the level that he would like to be able to maintain it, but he still has been not denied use. He has every right to irrigate it. He has every right to landscape and maintain it, and so he should be treated like anybody else in the city and pay that. The problem we run into if we start carving these things up and try to treat then everybody uniformly, they will all be able to come in and say, well, instead of the two-car garage, I have the three-car garage, and I want a special assessment for that. And pretty soon we have to rewrite that and the amount of staff time to do that, number one, initially, and then secondarily to follow up on that is going to create a real problem. I would suggest that we not go there. As I suggested in my memo, there is a remedy for Mr. Splett. I would submit first that the easement issue is really a red herring here. With the irrigation district, unless it completely denies his use, I could give an easement and still continue to use that. The fact that there may or may not be value to that diminishes Mr. Splett's points. But Mr. Splett does, if he does not want to pay this, has the option to have that surveyed and do a lot split. He's entitled to a lot split. And then he can transfer that water right off that. He can maintain the ownership of the property. He doesn't have to sell the property. He can maintain that property, and he can transfer that water right to the Keenan Municipal Irrigation District so we can use it somewhere else. I guess I'm troubled, as I pointed out when I went out to Mr. Splett's property this summer, the amount of water that he apparently is using on the rest of it and or his comments, including today, that he's just dumping water down the ditch. Perhaps in a spiteful mode of, you if I can't use it, I'm going to waste it, which is a violation of the code. So based on that, I would request that council deny his request for review and leave it where it's at. I'll stand for questions.
Okay. Questions for Richard Rhodes? Yes.
Richard, you said he was wasting water.
He said, well, when I went out there this summer and I walked from the street down to the ditch, his lawn was saturated in water. And this was the middle of the day, maybe lunchtime, right around that hour. And I didn't observe any sprinklers having been on or anything like that. So that's my observation that I made. In addition, he made it in a couple of his comments in his emails and then today that dumping water down the ditch, which means he's watering excessively and, in fact, violating the code for wanton waste of the water. So he may not be irrigating that section out there, but apparently, according to his comments, he's still using that water. But we don't want to get into a need to calculate each individual water use. That's why we uniformly say if your property is this big, the assumption is you use this much water.
Could you repeat the definition of waste that you
gave? So it says public rights of way, including, so it's road, ditches, and canals. So any ditch, but that to meet the assessor's requirement of waste, the owner of that property has to be denied use of that property. So I would submit that whatever they considered, they weren't aware that that property could be improved, meaning landscaping and those type of things. So I don't know what conversation took place between whoever had made that request and that. What they told me they did was look at an aerial picture and make that determination. However, if landscaping is available and Mr. Splett does landscape it, they will reconsider that waste definition.
Okay. Further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Council discussion.
I'll start if you want. I mean, I certainly, I understand the request, but I also share Rhodes' concerns in terms of, you know, I think about there's a house a couple doors down from me that is putting in a pad for an RV, and they would have this exact same argument now that even if we can accept, which I don't know that we necessarily can based on this argument, that the house and driveway are already factored in, anytime somebody puts in an RV pad, then they would be able to come in and say, you guys need to recalculate my water rate because now I can't irrigate this portion of my yard, and so I shouldn't have to pay for it. And I am concerned about the Pandora's box that would open up, and it just, in order for us to be fair and consistent, we would have to engage in those analyses and the amount of staff time I think that would be involved to do that on a yearly basis, and then make sure that when it's land you own and could use and irrigate but choose not to versus land that you can't irrigate if you wanted to because, like, there's a shop on it or something like that, the amount of checks we would have to do in order to ensure that the land isn't actually being irrigated, it just seems like way more trouble than we want to get into. So I think the fact that there is an alternative in terms of being able to do a lot split and just dedicating that right of, or the water rights appurtenant thereto to the city seems like the best way to address the situation like this. So that would be, my preference, I guess, would be to forward that suggestion and deny the appeal. But I'll hear what everybody else has to say.
Okay, further discussion.
Mayor, I probably would just concur with that. I think it's too hard to try to substantiate breaking parts off of people's properties that don't use. I mean, I pay extra, and I will probably never use the amount of water that I'm entitled to, but to put that burden on the other taxpayers to pay for, to go around everybody's house to assess it, I just wouldn't put that burden on the funding to do that. So, I mean, I understand where Mr. Splitz is coming from, but I just think as a whole, as in, as the citywide whole, we can't be picking one or two lots and try to do this. So I would say at this point I would concur on the denial of the request.
Well, I think also we would have to consider that there's a lot of properties in the city that might be able to have this same type of designation for one reason or another, and if we go through the process of reassessing them all, in the end, we still have to pay what we have to pay for the irrigation water, and I believe that the assessment rates would go up to the point to where it would be very minimal for everyone who receives benefit from having a certain amount of area pulled off of their property for whatever reasons those might be. So I think it just opens up a floodgate for a really lot of extra work and effort for the city to try to reassess things to actually end up with the same end result in the end anyway for what it cost. Any further discussion? Okay. I guess we are ready for a motion then, if that's the council's.
Given our discussion, I move we deny the request for a reduction in assessment from Dr. Splitz.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded for denial. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Splitz. Okay, so I think that was all that we have. We didn't have any other requests come in. So I think that does it for the Board of Corrections. So meeting adjourned. What's that?
Are we taking a break?
It's only been 30 minutes. Does anybody need it?
Do we need a break?
We technically have 2 minutes till 6. So.
Okay, you have a 2-minute break. Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza. Council Member Jones.
Here.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar.
Here.
Council Member McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Sear.
Here. I don't see that we have Scott Piper here. If you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Is there any questions or comments or anything we need to pull from that?
Mayor, I had a correction. On page 15 of 29, I believe the third paragraph down, there is a dollar amount listed for the for an expense of $1,500 that should be listed as $15,000. So it's probably just a typo. And the other thing I had, just a quick follow-up, and maybe Troy can answer this for me. Regarding the subdivision from last meeting, I can't remember what the name of it was, the one
Silver Trail.
Mm-hmm. I just have a clarification. They presented a map showing that they converted four lots in the center of the subdivision to open space.
They did.
Is there any public record or record of that map anywhere? I just can't seem to find it. How does that get entered into public record then?
Yeah, actually, I conferred with Richard Rhodes about this earlier today.
Yep.
But safe to say, yes, there is an exhibit in the file, and I'd let Richard expand on that. But that's a good question.
In any event, the map, the minutes reflect the three documents,
okay. And
those three documents are those that were submitted. So I double-checked with what was submitted that the clerk's office had with what I had Troy pull out today, and they do match. So that will be scanned in and attached to the minutes as that three-document exhibit.
Okay, so they're attached to these minutes. Okay,
yes.
Great. That's
right.
That's all I have. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay, anything further?
I move we approve the consent agenda with the change Pat noted.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the consent agenda with the correction made on page 15 of 29 of the minutes that it is 15,000 instead of 1,500. I think that covered it, right?
Yeah, thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin-Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, consent agenda has been approved. We don't have any community reports or requests. Public hearings. Planning and zoning staff requests that this item be tabled March 21st, 2017 City Council meeting. On the consideration for public hearing on 16-09-AN for an annexation. So we would need a motion to that effect.
I move we table the public hearing on 16-09-AN to the March 21st meeting.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to table that public hearing for the March 21st, 2017 council hearing. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. The second public hearing we have is consideration to approve 16-03-CPM comprehensive plan map amendment and 16-10-AN annexation Ashton Estates subdivision. Applicant CDN LLC requests approval to amend the comprehensive plan map from medium density residential to mixed use general over approximately 50.6 acres. This site is contiguous to the city of Cuna limits, and applicant requests approval to annex the same parcel into Cuna City with the following zones: C1 neighborhood commercial, R6 medium density residential, and R20 high density residential. The subject site is located on the southeast corner of Meridian and Deer Flat Roads. Do we have the applicant in the audience? Is there anything that we need to, that staff needs to present? Do you want the applicant to present first? Okay. Just state your name and address for the record, please.
Kelly Kerr, KM Engineering office address is 9233 West State Street, Boise. We're excited to be here in front of you, Mr. Mayor, and City Council. The project you have before you, we've worked hard with both city staff, taking into account some concerns from the neighbors to transition this project from commercial along the frontage where we have the busy streets to some higher density in the middle of the project, and then transitioning to medium density around the exterior to provide a nice buffer to the neighboring properties. The one thing I would like to point out is in our previous P&Z meeting, we did agree to reduce the density on the high-density portion from R20 to R12. Just our intent was, you know, not to get the type of larger apartment building that would include, and so we're absolutely intending to hold to the, what we agreed to in that P&Z hearing. Other than that, I'm happy to stand here for any questions.
Okay, questions for Kelly?
Not this time.
Nothing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Troy. Thank you.
Evening, Mayor Steer, council members. Just for the record, Troy DeHoon, Planner Free, Community Planning and Zoning Department. Just to follow up what the applicant, Kelly Kerr, has stated, this application, 16-03 CPM, Comprehensive Plan Map Amendment, and 16-10-AN Annexation for the Ashton Estates Subdivision, is before you tonight. Hopefully you've had a chance to review the packet and also the minutes from the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting that was held last month. Staff is here to let council know that all of the noticing procedures have been fulfilled. Letters have been sent to landowners within a distance greater than 300 feet, which is the minimum. The site has been posted. It was advertised in the QMM News. And not only that, but they have submitted all of the materials that are required and requested of staff in order to bring this application before you tonight. As Kelly mentioned at the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing, in response to some of the concerns that the neighbors had about high density being near their property, they did respond with a reduction from R20 to R12. So they would like to have that on the record that that is what they're intending to do. One question at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting was, did we need to renotice or do anything differently with that? And the answer is no, because they're actually asking for less than what was advertised. The applicant would like to bring forth a preliminary plat shortly hereafter, as soon as they receive what, in their opinion, a favorable outcome to this comp plan map change amendment and also this annexation request. Hopefully you've had a chance to read the packet and review it and come to this meeting with some questions prepared. I would stand at this time for any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for Troy?
Nothing.
Not this time.
Okay, thank you, Troy. Okay, before I open up the public hearing portion of this, I didn't have anyone sign up on the sign-in sheet except for Kelly. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up that wishes to do that before we open the public hearing? Okay, seeing none, then as a matter of procedure, we need to open the public hearing portion of this meeting for 16-03 CPM and 16-10 AN. Once again, I'll ask, is there anyone who wished to testify? Seeing none, if we would have a motion to close the public hearing portion.
I move we close public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and second to close the public hearing. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Discussion amongst council.
Sorry, I'm struggling with technology. Somebody else wants to start.
Mayor, I'll start. I have no
no concerns about it. I appreciate the changing from the R20 to the R12. I think that was a great concession. I assume that our trail maps and all that other stuff for our future planning will probably be implemented in that site. And obviously they would have to get all the other approvals from the other entities. So, and being that there doesn't seem to be any objections from any other entities that have been contacted, I have no concern. I guess I do have two follow-ups or one follow-up question for Troy. I noticed that there's a procedural that I have not seen before, but I believe you stated that is something that occurs as far as the annexation, as far as when that gets submitted or permitted, or I assume you know what I'm talking about as far as the approval to get the annexation recorded, I guess. Is that still going to be in place, or is that changed?
Let me see if I can catch up here. So you're asking about the...
I believe that the annexation is going to be withheld until the, not necessarily the approval, but the recording of the annexation will be withheld until the preliminary plat comes in and gets approved.
Yes.
And typically I've never been involved in something like that, so I just was curious of the...
I'll give you the $3 tour real quick. There was some concern from the neighbors that we were putting three zones on one parcel.
Yep.
Staff responded by suggesting that we do this in order to define where those areas are, because there was a fear that they could get 5.3 acres. I'm paraphrasing, but 5.3 acres for the R12. And that it somehow magically would grow to 12 acres somewhere between this approval and the preliminary plat. So what we said was we're going to wait and see what happens with the preliminary plat in order to record those zoning changes. The annexation the annexation and the zoning would record after staff sees that they have submitted a preliminary plat and or a mixed planned unit development application. I just confirmed with the applicant just before this meeting they intend to submit a preliminary plat for this subdivision within a short period of time, less than 2 months.
And I would assume obviously staff has no issues with this and no concern for a future request for that type of scenario.
Yeah, well, staff has none. But correct. You're right, it is a unique condition.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion?
I'm not sure who to ask. On page 21 of 82, there is a schematic of a zoning exhibit, and it shows the breakdown of the R12, the R6, and the C1. If you look on the left-hand corner, which would be the northeast corner, there's a line going through there leaving an open space. What is the purpose of that? Is that a public access?
Please go to the mic.
Kelly Kerr, King of Engineering. State Street, Boise. Let's see here. So
it'll be on the northeast corner of the lot on Deer Flat.
Yep. And what? Which line?
So are you talking about the diagonal line there?
Yeah, it cuts the corner, right?
So this is the property line right there, and that's the section line.
Oh, that's your property. Next question, would the R12 be better situated on this south portion of that than the R6 move forward? Are those, let's say they're two stories, you're going to have everybody looking down upon all the homes behind it. If they were moved completely south, you wouldn't have that that obstruction of people looking into the backyards of the residential area.
And I think, Councilman, a lot of those questions will get answered when we actually come in with a preliminary plat, so you can see how we have open space broken up on the project. It will be mitigated having where it's going to sit on the project when you actually can see it, the CLA layout. That's the short answer for you.
Okay. Further question? Thank you very much.
Anybody else? Mayor, I move that we approve the comp plan amendment of 1603-CPM and the annexation of 16-10-AN with the noted change of going from R20 to R12.
And the proposed recommended conditions.
Oh, under the proposed recommended conditions outlined in the staff report. Sorry.
I will second that then.
Okay, motion is made and seconded on 16-03-CPM and 16-10-AN. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Yes. We can do that if that's your, I mean, if somebody wanted to vote yes on one and no on the other, we can certainly do that at any time. But okay, next item is proclamation for March 2017 as the 15th annual March for Meals Month. Were you here to? I'm sorry, I forget your name.
Grant.
Grant. Yeah. If you want to come up and just do a short presentation, that would be fine. Just state your name and address for the record. And
sure. Thank you so much. Grant Jones, 4584 North Futurity Avenue, Boise, 83704. So thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council, for having me here tonight and for proclaiming March as March for Meals Month in the city of CUNA. Meals on Wheels is a very important part of the CUNA fabric. We have delivered and served over 11,000 meals to CUNA seniors in 2016, and that number continues to increase. And we always say the food is important, the food is critical actually, but Meals on Wheels is much more than a meal. And so the March for Meals observance is extremely important. Food insecurity should not be an issue among seniors in America, but it is. One out of six seniors faces food insecurity at some point. So that's pretty significant. Unfortunately, CUNA is no exception. Ada County is no exception. Idaho is no exception. We're a little bit better than the national average, but not by much. So we always say the food definitely is important because it's nourishment for the seniors, and in many cases, it's their only nutritious meal that they'll eat. But for the homebound CUNA resident, it also means someone's going to check on them. They're going to have contact with the outside world, and that's very critical because for some of the seniors, that's the only contact they have is that Meals on Wheels volunteer. For the folks that come to the Senior Center at CUNA Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, the food, again, is important, and it addresses food insecurity, but it also means their socialization. They can eat with other people. They don't have to sit at home alone and talk to their pets and have dinner or lunch with them. They can come and actually sit at a table with other folks and have a conversation. So we think March for Meals, the observance of it is extremely important. So again, I thank you so much for drawing attention and drawing awareness to the issue of food insecurity in CUNA. It's important. And I would like to also invite all of you as part of the March for Meals observance to come to Kleiner Park in Meridian on March 25th for an actual march for meals. We're hoping to have, again, the largest march in the country, and Metro Meals on Wheels has been successful in achieving that distinction the last 2 years. We don't want to stop on year number three. So come out at 9:30 on March 25th. It's a Saturday at Kleiner Park. You don't have to pay an entry fee. You don't have to bug your friends and neighbors for pledges. You just come out there, and Food Services of America will donate $5 for every person that comes and marches, and that will help get our distinction up there as the most or the largest march in the country. It's a third of a mile walk, so you can even come in wheelchairs and walkers, and you can come in any way that you can, and it just draws awareness and calls attention to the need for Meals on Wheels as a solution to food insecurity. So thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate everything you do. My my mother was 95 years old when she passed away, and for many years one of the highlights of her week was being able to go to the senior center and have that fellowship time with her friends. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people here and there talk about when meals are delivered to their house, that person actually goes the extra mile and helps them pick stuff up off the sidewalk that they can't do themselves, and just little things like that that really make a difference in a person's life. So
they'll change light bulbs and pick up pictures, boxes of pictures that they're working on. And then again, we'll also find folks that have fallen or had a medical situation, and we're able to get them medical attention quickly too. So we appreciate the partnership between Metro Meals on Wheels and the City of CUNA. So thank you so much for what you do.
Good.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So this is the proclamation for the 15th Annual March for Meals Month. Whereas on March 22, 1972, President Richard Nixon signed into law a measure that amended Older Americans Act of 1965 and established a national nutrition program for seniors 60 years and older. And whereas Meals on Wheels America established the March for Meals campaign in March 2002 to recognize the historic month, the importance of the Older Americans Act nutrition programs, both congregate and home-delivered, and raised awareness about the escalating problem of senior hunger in America, and whereas the 2017 Observance Month, March for Meals celebrates 15 years of providing an opportunity to support Meals on Wheels programs that deliver vital and critical services by donating, volunteering, and raising awareness about senior hunger and isolation. And whereas Meals on Wheels programs, both congregated and home-delivered in CUNA, have served our community admirably for more than 40 years, and whereas volunteers for Meals on Wheels programs in CUNA are the backbone of the program, and they not only deliver nutritious meals to seniors and individuals with disabilities who are significant risk of hunger and isolation, but also caring concern and attention to their welfare, and whereas Metro Meals on Wheels in Ada County provides nutritious meals to seniors throughout the Meridian area that help them maintain their health and independence, thereby preventing unnecessary falls, hospitalization, and or premature institutionalization. And whereas Metro Meals on Wheels programs in Ada County provide a powerful socialization opportunity for seniors to help combat loneliness and isolation, and whereas Meals on Wheels programs in Ada County deserve recognition for the contributions they have made and will continue to make local communities, our state, and our nation. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Joel Steer, Mayor of the City of CUNA, Idaho, hereby proclaim March 2017 as the 15th Annual March for Meals Month and urge every citizen to take this month to honor our Meals on Wheels programs, the seniors they serve, and the volunteers who care for them. Our recognition of and involvement in National 2017 March for Meals can enrich our entire community and help combat senior hunger and isolation in America. Thank you very much. Item 7B is the Economic Development Committee requests up to $9,000 for a hotel feasibility study. We actually have a unique opportunity here. With the size of our community, we don't really have hotel chains that are interested in areas like this until they grow out more. We have actually found a hotel chain that their goal is to get into communities that might otherwise not be looked at by hotel chains. As part of this, and with any hotel chain, they require these feasibility studies. Chris has actually found and is applying for some grant funds to help to pay for this, so it may actually, if we're lucky enough to get that, may not cost us the $9,000. We actually have a meeting set up with these people tomorrow to start talking about how we can help to move forward with this. So I guess with that, I'll stand for any questions. We are asking, though, for a possibility of up to $9,000 for this feasibility study to help get established a hotel chain in the city of Kuna.
I'll ask a question.
Yes.
Do we have any, I guess, have we put any thought into or planning behind how we wanted to respond to other requests like this in the future? I guess, stated a different way, one of my main concerns with approving this would be that there might be an expectation that the city would expend similar amounts of money as an incentive to get other businesses to come here, be it by doing a study if that's needed, or, you know, give me a discount on my taxes or something, that if we're willing to spend, you know, $9,000 for one type of business, what are we willing to do for other businesses? So have we given any thought to that, or have any sort of anticipated kind of approach that we wanted to take with similar requests or anything like that?
You've actually made some comments before about things that we could possibly do to help finance and help to bring in some businesses and things. And with the Economic Development Committee and some of the discussions we've had, we're kind of trying to strategize through some of that. So this opportunity just kind of arose out of the blue, and so we went for this one first. But we are working on that type of a plan. But Chris, yes?
I think, not to get into the details of the company on the record at this point, but they've expressed interest in us. We evaluated that the feasibility study, they don't get a benefit from it. There's no direct benefit to the hotel other than the study itself. So that there's a different company that does the studies. There's a choice of three of them. And the hotel company doesn't benefit from us using them as a feasibility study. What the hotel benefits from is the data that comes over in that feasibility study, which says whether the hotel can survive, those things. Wendy and I had worked probably on the last months. We've spent months working to put together the demographics for potential lodging. And from that, then they took interest in the city. I think that your concern is valid, and if a company is not interested in us enough to try to step forward and look at potential property locations and plan a trip here to meet with bankers and look at the demographics we provided, then yes, we probably should be cautious about how much incentive that we use to bring them here. But this particular company has follows up. It's they are looking to potentially get the ball rolling. They plan to come up and visit look at the site, meet with our team. They're asking to meet with bankers. They have some investors that they would be bringing as well. So it is a cohesive response.
Are they asking us to bear the entire cost of the feasibility study, or are we splitting it? Because it seems like, I guess part of what's motivating my question is, it seems like in the grand scheme of, like, building a hotel here, $9,000 is, like, chump change. So if this is, like, the thing that's going to determine whether or not they come here, it tends to make me a little bit skeptical about the level of their interest. But I haven't been involved in stuff, so I'm not trying to, like, second guess.
We can use it for other hotels. If this one turned out to not pan out, we evaluated some other cities similar to our size who are, several of them are in Idaho, a couple of them are in Utah, and yes, they did fund their own feasibility studies versus having the hotel funded.
Possibly my last question before I let other people talk. Is there any room? I don't know anything about these feasibility studies. I have guesses about what they probably include, but I'm just wondering if it's something that we're footing the entire bill for, is there any room to try to make it more useful to us as a city? So by, like, adding in additional questions or assessing other measures at the same time, where we would still end up getting the information that they need, but we might also be able to use it for our comp plan or just other stuff generally?
Right, that's what we had discussed at the last economic development meeting, was to try and take a look at where our gaps are in our developments and to do that through this feasibility study. So, yes, we would like to include some additional questions, and I think if council has specific information they'd like to have included or have us to withdraw from the study, I think that it's very appropriate and very helpful.
Okay, yeah, I would, to the extent we end up approving it, then I would love to chat with you or whoever some more, particularly about if there might be a way to build in, like, business-type questions, just to maybe glean some additional useful information for the chamber and stuff like that. Because I think I have less heartburn about approving this, an expenditure of this size for one specific type of business, if we can end up getting $9,000 worth of information that's useful to the city anyway, and then it's just as a side benefit the rest. But looping back to my first comment, I just really wanted to make sure that we were kind of thinking about the idea of, are there people going to be asking for similar things, and do we want to, you know, I've said this like 1,000 times, do we want to try to articulate our framework and kind of come up with our criteria and stuff to the extent we can beforehand, rather than trying to come up with those criteria in response to requests, because then it seems like, you know, that's easier to make an allegation that we're, you know, picking and choosing and crafting things to meet the situation versus crafting the rules to apply to everybody.
Yeah, and my hope actually was as we build with the Economic Development Committee was to come up to some type of a budget. In fact, in the last meeting, that was one of the things that I was talking to the committee about, was giving some forethought into what we thought we really need that we could bring before council for funding, and then this opportunity came up at the same time, and that's kind of why we jumping ahead of that gun. I do recall, though, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago when Mayor Nelson was here, we had there was some discussion on trying to talk to some hotel chains about coming here, and they all require some type of a feasibility study. And as I recall, the one back then was somewhere around $20,000, and I don't know who they had doing that or what was included in that, but that was, we were still working on trying to get development going in CUNA again, which isn't a problem now anymore, but so it was kind of out of our reach to ask for that, and we didn't see that there would probably be a lot of positive response. But this company has been very responsive and called and wants to set things up, and already is talking about bankers and investors and things like that. So I think that if a member of council would also like to sit on those meetings, that would be good. So if you would like to, or someone else, that would certainly, you would certainly be welcome to do that. So,
But that's kind of how this got here, rather than running it through the Economic Development Committee, which was kind of the plan. We this is just one of those opportunities that arose, so this is how we got here tonight. Yes, Chris.
And I did want to mention also that there, the option of, we have three different feasibility companies that could do the study, and there is one that will be up in the area this month, and so it's possible that we're applying for the grant, but it's also possible we can negotiate the price down a little bit, $500,000 or something like that, potentially, because they're already going to be here doing another feasibility study. So kind of maybe get a little bit of a discount for them being in the area.
Okay. Further discussion? Yes.
I know we've looked at hotels during the last 10 years. I have mixed emotions because I remember the city council spending $40,000 on a bridge over Strobel Road there, Meridian Road at one time for a development that never materialized. I've always thought that if the city was to do any kind of a feasibility, that we could recoup some of our feasibility funds by selling that feasibility study to whoever wants it at a fair price, let's say $1,500 to $2,000. So if you've got three or four motel chains coming in, rather than putting out $9,000 each, they would be more receptive to being able to cough up $1,500 and be able to look at our study that we have done.
I think generally that's a requirement for motel chains is that you do a feasibility study, and I don't know that they really. Yes, Chris.
One of the, I don't know, not quirky, but something about lodging is that there's so many different hotels, and what a feasibility study for, say, a Hilton is going to be a little bit different than it's going to be, say, for a Motel 6. The reason why is because each of them have a different structure as far as building costs, the investment of staff, what amenities they offer. So one feasibility study doesn't always fit all, though it will get you into the range of the types that would work for here. If that makes sense. If it didn't make sense, I can try and clarify.
Yeah, it makes sense. I have concerns similar to Brianna's. When you open a door like this, business sticks their foot in that door. When do you slam the door shut, and when do you keep the door open? I would think this town is ready for a hotel or motel, the population that we have. So I just have mixed concerns about opening that door and somebody sticking their foot in it.
Okay. Further discussion?
Mayor, I'll just add, I think I agree with my fellow council members. I'm not opposed to doing a feasibility study. I would prefer to have it more broad and not specific. I would like to probably maybe get our requirements in place before the money is approved, but I would have no problem coming back and looking at it after we've set our criteria and our guidelines and maybe talking to these feasibility companies before we set any dollar amounts or anything like that. So I'd be more comfortable with that.
Yes.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the grant, how much it might be, what are our chances?
The grant is for $3,000. That's a required dollar-for-dollar match, so we would be required to put forth a minimum match of $3,000 towards that. I think that our chances are it's a good project. I think to guarantee that we'd get it is not feasible, but I would say we are in the 75 to 80% range of getting it. I think it's an economic development grant. They recognize feasibility studies are necessary. They realize that different aspects of economic development, such as promoting the city, incentives, we've used it for other marketing materials as well. So I think it's a new, it would be a new project for us, and that they would look at that.
So if we have a feasibility study done to their specifications, is wouldn't that then be something we can expand on afterwards? Would it necessarily have to be done all at once to broaden the scope of a feasibility study? I mean, I guess my concern with that is if we broaden the scope of a feasibility study, obviously that's going to take more time and effort, and the expense is going to go up greatly. So I don't think that it would be beneficial to us at this point in time for this particular project to hold off on that. I mean, I don't know if we can expand on a feasibility study afterwards or how that would work.
We can include, as we can include some, we couldn't, you know, expand it exponentially and not see that we would have a time lapse and that we would see a large price increase. But if we look at the hospitality range of business, we could include, you know, questions that would focus towards that. Probably on hospitality, you're not going to ask how many gas stations would be appropriate for, you know, the feasibility, if it's for hospitality, we would more look towards the restaurant type thing, lodging, those type of things.
Entertainment?
Some, I think. Entertainment, yeah. Because Wendy and I studied several feasibility studies for hotels from Colorado to Oregon, Washington, and they do. They look at and that's why we put together the demographics based on those feasibility studies, and that is they want to know how many events you're having. They want to know what recreation is close, how many people utilize that recreation, restaurants, what's the entertainment. What's the opportunity for having a conference in a location, and what would the participants of that conference, where would they entertain themselves after? Green belts, natural resources, all those.
I think some of the questions I was hoping for might be along the lines of, what is one type of entertainment, like business, mm-hmm. that you wish CUNA had that we didn't have, or like what's your top three? Or, you know, things like I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but, like, have you ever been to any sort of agribusiness entertainment venue in CUNA? If no, what would entice you to go there? You know, looking at, like, wineries, corn mazes, like, all that kind of stuff, and just trying to, yeah, have a sort of a...
And those are all things that we included in the demographics. I mean, it was a pretty intensive study of demographics that we did, and we did include all that stuff. And I think that we... I think we want to know that when it comes to hospitality and the connection through the community for that. I think those are important things to ask and know.
Okay, yes.
Do you have any idea what the Birds of Prey draws on the year? I do. That is... The Morley Nelson Birds of Prey draws 123,000 visitors annually.
I don't know who sat out there and counted them, but.
I'm
Okay, that's good. Well, it sounds like there's some potential urgency with this, just from the perspective of, I don't know what goes into choosing which company we go with, if it's purely based on cost or if we have leeway depending on, you know, who we think would do the best job. But it sounded like there was a potential to save some money by using a particular company because they were already going to be out here. So I would probably be fine with and can convert this into a motion if there's interest. But with going ahead and approving the expenditure of funds, noting that there will be an effort to negotiate the price down and that there will be efforts to get grant funding and use that grant funding for this if we're approved, and also that there is plans to, in the near future, try to come up with some parameters, I guess, for how we deal with these types of requests in the future so that we can have a framework from which to approach these requests.
And we will certainly do our due diligence there negotiating for the best price and going after the grant funds and that type of thing, and certainly would be aware of the broader the scope of this, the better, but keeping within the range that's feasible for a feasibility study. So.
Yeah, I think it gets us, I mean, at least it gives me some additional confidence that if we need to, this is distinguishable from other requests for tax incentives or whatever, because we are gleaning information that's useful to us as a city beyond just finding out whether a hotel is feasible for a hotel.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think having those additional questions and stuff are useful.
One last question, Mayor.
Yes. We have a small budget. Chris, I don't know if you...
It's... we have $1,000 in there, and then we also received a $500 gift from Idaho Power.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact, like I said, I just started around that by the committee to get their ideas on what we need for that, so... We didn't ask for much of that last year because we were still putting together what the scope of responsibilities are and what direction we were going with that. So we will certainly have something to present to council for a budget for the next fiscal year. But
would you like those funds to be applied towards this expense if approved? They are not earmarked. They're not encumbered for anything specific. So there should be about $1,500 available in there. If you would like to leverage those funds as part of the approval, then certainly we would encumber those funds.
So if we were to allocate $1,000 plus $3,000 for the grant, that would leave the city with approximately $5,000?
Roughly.
Would we want to go ahead and approve up to the full amount if we don't get the grant, just so they don't have to come back and ask for the rest of it?
Well, that, Mayor, if I may, would we not want to see what the scope's going to be before we do anything? So we see it at that point? I don't know. I thought that's kind of what we are looking for, is to let them move forward, but we would have an opportunity before it gets implemented to pull back if it's something that we don't want to do.
Are you saying your expectation is that we would get to, like, review the questions that's included?
That type of stuff, yeah, and find out what their scope is and what they're looking for.
I think we get to kind of decide what that is. Like, the hotel wouldn't tell us, here's what we want you to look at, right?
They put forth the information that they need for their feasibility study, which for lodging, certainly we can our preference, Economic Development Committee and staff's preference, would be to ask council to approve funding. And then we are happy to bring, as we move through the process, we will certainly provide you with copies of what the proposed questions are and then try and vet those out so that we can get those questions that you want. But I would ask that you consider approval of this tonight and contingent applying on the grant. The company in question is reaching out to us, and the feasibility study is a piece that they need to know that we're committed to their commitment and it to continue to move this project forward.
The one other piece I thought was, because this particular company that might be doing the study is going to be here
Correct.
In the month of March,
yes.
It sounded like there was at least the potential that the study would need to take place prior to the next council meeting.
Correct.
And I'm not opposed to, I mean, I don't necessarily think it needs to have our voting on, but I just want to make sure that we have some say in what we're, if we can add things that we're allowed to do that. And I think the committee, and if there's going to be a council member on that discussion, I would be fine with that. I thought we spent that money already, though.
Which money?
The Economic Development Committee money on the advertisement in the magazine.
That was actually last year.
Last year, okay.
Yeah.
So, Councilmember Jones, if I can understand your directions so that's clear, if council approves tonight with the conditions of applying for a grant and using the funds that are in the economic development account as it is, that we would have one of the council members working with us to evaluate the questions on the feasibility study to move that forward. Am I correcting?
I would not have a problem with that.
Okay.
I would also assume that the $3,000 would come out of the grant fund that we set aside. We set aside $40,000 a year for grant matching.
That's correct.
I would have put no problem with that.
In your motion, if you choose to approve, could you also designate which council member you'd like us to work with?
I'm happy to be that person, unless anybody else had a strong preference.
I'm all right with that.
Okay. Just so nobody felt like they were being voluntold to do it.
No, I'm good with what.
Okay.
So then I move we approve the expenditure of, I'm going to say up to $8,000, $3,000 of which would be used for grant matching if we get the grant. To be, or I guess, do we want to say $8,000 or $7,500?
$8,000, please.
Okay. For use by the Economic Development Committee for a hotel feasibility study, noting that a council member will be involved with approving the questions or adding some additional questions, and that council member will be me.
Second.
And that money would come from the general fund, with the exception of $3,000 would come from the grant matching fund if we get the grant.
Can you repeat all that?
No.
Second and still count?
It'll come out of contingency, and then the $3,000 will go back in.
Mm-hmm.
If we get the
grant. Yep.
Yeah.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin-Wanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Discussion and decision on reallocation of Indian Creek funds. Bobby Withrow, Parks Director.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. So kind of the backstory on this. When we went through the budget, for some weird reason, I for the monies we budgeted for the Bobcat Toolcat, I read it as something different than what was on there. I had the numbers reversed, and I didn't catch it until after it was done. I was going to come back and ask for contingency money, but I decided to wait. And then recently, the water is into the creek, so we really can't do anything with the monies for the Indian Creek egress and ingress. So I was going to ask if we could reallocate that towards the equipment purchase with an additional couple attachments instead of waiting until next year.
I have a question.
Okay.
The additional attachments, was that included originally in the 53, or that's explaining the extra 5,800 that you're asking for?
That's explaining the extra
5,800. Okay. Are those because you hadn't asked for them in the first, or because you hadn't thought you'd ask for them in the first place? Are they? Tell me more. Are they like things you really think you need, or?
A couple of them we've been looking at for a couple of years, like an angle room. To kind of help with cleaning up the projects and then going along the green belt, getting that cleaned up every couple times. Like right now I have a mess out on Arbor Ridge because we top dressed the park. And so if we were able to purchase the angle room, we can get that all cleaned up nice and tidy without renting the attachment.
And like parking lots and things like that.
And so we can clean up the parking lots and that was one of the big ones I wanted to try to get. The other ones, I'm not sure yet, but there will be a detailed list of what we want to get.
Okay.
Bobby, are you going to be coming back asking for 23 then for address again in October?
Yes, probably. I couldn't hook up with the Army Corps of Engineers this year. I tried emailing my contact multiple times. I've gone to their actual website, the federal website, and tried two different times to get someone to respond to me, and I couldn't. So that's something I'm going to continue to work on, yes.
Okay. Is the 59,000 then coming from the general fund, or is that going to be broken equally among PI and sewer and water?
It'll come from the general fund.
The entire amount?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's all already been allocated.
Yeah,
parts.
The monies have already been budgeted for. I was just seeing if we can move it over to the equipment. So I'm not asking for
any. But you've only budgeted 53. You budgeted
35.
Mm-hmm. You're asking for the 28, which is another 24. Then you're going to ask for the 24 back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because obviously, like you say, you're going to ask for the money back next year to do the project, and I have no problem with that. I was curious, though, maybe John might be able to answer this. Do we have other capital expenditure money that has been left over that where we've come under budget and we've allocated certain amounts that we could apply to this year, and then that way we can carry over his 23 from this year over for next year? So I hope you understand what I'm saying. I mean, I think that is there how much funding is there that.
Hear me okay?
Yeah.
Capital project fund from prior years where we budgeted items we had underspent, what's remaining in those monies sitting in the capital projects fund?
Yes.
Correct. Between $7,000 and $10,000.
I have no concerns. I mean, I'd like to maybe take that money first and use that and then give you the rest, and then you can – I guess it makes no difference accountability-wise. John can make that happen as far as the books. But Being that that's left over and it's already been allocated, and I would probably like to apply that to the 23.8 and then give you the rest from your, and then come back and ask for that $7,000 to $10,000 next year to cover the difference of spent. But however's easier, but that's my, what I'd like to see. If anybody else doesn't have a problem with that.
Seems to me like it'd be, easier at the budget hearing to just say, remember how we budgeted for that, and then we spent on something else, so now we need this amount instead of...
Whatever's easier. I mean, I'd like to at least maybe just get that other money back into contingency, I guess, and we can discuss that at budget time.
Yeah, okay.
And so if you would, when this happened, just make notation of that so you can actually mention that and remind everybody at budget time that happened.
You guys said you were going to pay for it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Why isn't this spread out equally among all the different departments? It's going to be used by all the departments, I'm sure.
This piece of equipment, it was mainly going to be used by the Parks Department. We do share equipment, but this one was going to be generally just park use. I'm not saying the other departments can't use it, but it was going to be just generally park use.
Parks?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's mainly more of a utility vehicle than
a tractor
or a backhoe type thing where we'd be using it for projects. We're using it more for utility maintenance than
We do. We have a skidster, and then we have a little mini skidster. This piece of equipment would run all those attachments that we get for the Bobcats. So,
I move we reallocate $23,800 from the Indian Creek Ingress Egress project to the Bobcat Toolcat purchase, along with attachments that would. Yes, go
ahead. Second. Motion is made and seconded for the reallocation of those funds. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. Continued from the February 21, 2017 City Council meeting, consideration to approve Kuna Splash Pad location with the price breakdown. Bobby Withrow.
Hello again. After the last council meeting, I went through, after council wanted me to break out the expenditures for everything. On the first page, I went through and broke up the price of each of the amenities that would go into the splash pad. As you can see, they're not cheap, but they are durable.
And fun.
I have talked with Meridian. I forgot his name, but he runs all the splash pads in Meridian. And they're going to these types of amenities as well in their new splash pads. And talking with him, he said we were on the exact right track we needed to be, so that was kind of helpful. Moving forward with all of the amenities and holding tank and then the water distribution system, we're sitting at about $178,436. And we can add and subtract those amenities. If we need to, they're not set in stone. Basically, those are second phase items. If we do take them out, we can put in a little placeholder. I'll call it a placeholder. It'll basically just spray water up from the ground until we put something in place. So, moving on to the locations. The first location I did was Bernie Fisher on B. Did the price breakdown of the water pipe. Over there we put a fence with a buffer or landscape buffer. We came up with roughly $57,000. which would put the project at $236,000. Next I did Bernie Fisher D. Kind of same type of thing. We need to put a fence around it. That's about it. The price of that one is roughly $60,000, so total would be $238,000. Then we did the Greenbelt location. This one is a little bit more expensive because we don't have great access or ADA access to it at all, so we would need to provide that. That's why we have the walking path. And then we also would probably need to put a net along the baseball field so nobody gets a baseball or something to the side of the head while they're out enjoying the splash pad. The total on that one was $88,000, pushing the total of that project to $266,000, which is over. But like I said before, if we chose this site, we would just take the amenities out. So we can concentrate on it, get everything we needed here. And then the first meeting we had, Councilman Cardozo wanted me to talk to the chief and get his thoughts and everything. I sent him an email and he responded. I added that in there as well. And the very last page, I gave a picture of everything we're trying to put in there to make our splash pad stand out from the other ones. With that, I am open up for any questions.
Hi.
Any questions?
Yes.
So I noticed on the Greenbelt location one, it still says the construction will hit the street. Were you able to check, or is it just not going to work to – I know it doesn't show on the picture that's in the packet here, but I know when we were looking at the other pictures last meeting, it seemed like there was a water line that went along – I can't think of the street that is.
Yeah, yes. That. Sorry, we did not take that away from the cons. So.
Oh, okay, so we would be able to run it down there?
Yes.
Down that. Okay, perfect.
Yep.
I guess, I don't know if this is so much a question as just a comment, but I'll throw it out there. With regard to, so Chief Dusso's primary concern sounded like, well, lighting and then having an area that is kind of visible so that people can be aware if there's a malfeasance afoot. I'm wondering if locating this by the Greenbelt would be like a good start to doing more lighting through there. I, like I said, it's not really a question necessarily. But I appreciate you working all this up. I mean, I think I still have kind of the same feelings as last time where it sure would be nice to be able to put this in the Greenbelt location and kind of maintain Bernie Fisher for some of the bigger events and festivals and stuff that we've been talking about wanting to try to attract. For that reason, I think I'm probably okay with the difference in price. So long as we feel like we can address some of the safety concerns that Chief had, maybe coming up with like a plan for starting lighting around there and then moving into more of the green belt or something like that as appropriate. But what do other folks think?
Bobby, I had a question for you on the just on the splash pad itself, real fast before you comment on or add to that, I should say.
Yep.
There's a credit of $11,407. Can you explain what that is?
That is a manufacturing credit.
Okay, and then what you have on here right now is going to give us roughly what the picture that you've given us. Okay.
Yes.
To go back to the Greenbelt location, I would definitely agree with Brianna on that. I think it would add another amenity over there. I am curious, though, as far as what we see on this map right here in this picture, is there only one disc golf hole on that, or does that contain two? Or
The picture there contains the disc golf tee, which is just north of the splash pad.
Okay.
I think it's
actually. Yeah. Here. Yeah. Yeah. I see that.
And then there is a basket just north of the volleyball court.
Okay. So it goes around the building? Is it? Okay.
So yeah, that T goes all the way, if you're looking at the picture,
yep.
All the way to the left.
Okay, so it goes down.
If we moved it, we would just move it in front of the.
Okay.
Would that increase the degree of difficulty if you're going to throw it through the splash pad?
Probably.
and here's something, I mean, just to throw this out there, not to throw another thing out there. What is the feasibility of putting the splash pad where the volleyball court is and moving the volleyball court? That would create more visibility from the street with the splash pad there.
That's a very good question. We'd run into the same problem we had when we wanted to put it out here. That's railroad property right there, and they wouldn't allow us to put it on there.
But put the volleyball court where you have the splash pad and put the splash pad where...
Yeah, he's saying
Where the volleyball court's at, that's part of the...
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Sorry.
Yep.
Okay. What would it... I guess what would it cost to put lights on the back of the bathrooms, and is there availability power-wise? And
but power-wise, we do have plenty of power right there, and it would probably be, I would say, less than 1,000, right around 1,000.
Because that might alleviate some concerns with lighting in the short future. I like the green build, and I like the other one on the Bernie Fisher Park at B, but I think the Greenbelt one would be great amenity over there with the parking and all that. So I think it would just add to that, and we can even add a little more in there. How receptive is it to – what is the railroad's response to putting stuff on there?
They're very limited on what they want us or what they'll allow us to put on there. Anything that's considered
a permanent fixture.
Like a permanent fixture. So like the volleyball court, we can take those poles out and move them. It's not permanent. Same thing with the disc golf.
Okay.
Something like the splash pad, that would be permanent, yeah. And it'd be a lot easier to move if they had to.
Is there room there for any type of what do I want to call it? The shade things, whatever you want to call it. I can't think of the word.
Like a gazebo?
No, not the gazebo. Yeah, whatever you're building, your structure you're building. The
picnic shelters?
Your picnic shelters, yeah.
Yeah.
And is there, now, along that fence line, is there where the power is that all our property too?
Mm-hmm.
So we can add actually shelters along that fence line where the power is and people can actually.
Sorry, so for part of it, so if you're looking at the Greenbelt location, there is a box around. For the splash pad.
Yep, I see that.
That's our property.
Okay.
And then that it kind of ends right there, so we're limited on what we can do.
So you could put one or two maybe over there with the power.
And this will be ready by June 1st, right?
Yeah. We're shooting for sometime this summer.
I wouldn't be opposed to the green belt, and I wouldn't be opposed to spending a little extra money to do it. So.
Everybody write this down as the time Pat said he's okay with spending extra money.
Yep.
That's 7 so far tonight. Okay, further discussion or questions?
Since I'm getting senile in my old age, I know 3 weeks ago I was all for the Greenbelt, but after I read the little report given by your chief of police, and I've looked at very elaborate, and I'm beginning to wonder if number D would be a better location where it's more in the public, more seen by the public. I'm not sure we wouldn't see a lot of vandalism in those. I thought they were just going to be ports in the ground shooting water up like some of the other cities. It'd be hard to vandalize that to a certain degree, but with all these instruments that we're installing. I get concerned about vandalism in Greenville because it's not readily seen by the police or public. I'm getting to wonder now, after looking at this, if D would be a better location.
Would you feel that B would even be better because it's right there on the street?
I think it's more readily seen because you've got all summer when we're using it, you've got people coming over and dumping their RVs. So it would be more to the public day and night as opposed to the Greenbelt. Location-wise, I think the Greenbelt's better. For less vandalism, I would think D would be better. So I kind of have mixed emotions. I'd go with whatever the others want, but if we were to just have water squirting up off the ground, I wouldn't mind having the Greenbelt. But if we're going to have a lot of apparatus that could be readily climbed on and broken, I would think D would be a better location. Ask me in 2 weeks, I might be on B or C.
Am I correct? I mean, it is my impression that these items are difficult to break because they're like heavy metal, basically. So I think I'm less concerned about anybody breaking them. I mean, like spray painting them maybe, but.
The park compared to stuff on the greenbelt like the Frisbee nets and stuff like that, benches, what vandalism, one to the other more or less?
We generally see more vandalism on picnic tables than anything else, just because it's easier to write with marker and scratch in with a knife or something.
Right.
I think my strong preference is the Greenbelt location, just because we have so much stuff already in Bernie Fisher, and I like the idea of trying to spread things out a little bit. And we'll need plenty of space for concerts and stuff to fill the hotel.
Huh. And there's a lot of shade over there already, too, with people can hang out. And
okay. Further discussion? We do need a motion.
Do we just need a motion on location or authorizing the... I don't remember how much we budgeted for this. Wasn't it like 120 or something?
160 from general fund and then 80 from grant fund.
Okay.
Or something.
So, yeah, I think we were at 240 where we were.
Okay.
So, for the time being, location would be great. If we want to go over the numbers later, we can.
Okay. I just didn't know what you needed today.
Okay. Yeah, I need the...
Just location, okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm willing to make a motion right now for the Greenbelt one. Is that what folks want? Is everybody okay with that? Do you want to talk about it more first?
So are you going to make a motion that $20,000 comes out of the contingency to make up the difference?
He said he doesn't want us to do any money yet, just the location, and then I think there's going to be further workup and more precise figures before money beyond what we've already got authorized to spend. Mm-hmm. All right. I move we approve the Greenbelt location for the splash pad.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded for the Greenbelt location for the splash pad. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Consideration to approve resolution number R22-2017. Approving the transportation priority list. Wendy Howell.
Okay, before you tonight is the annual transportation priority list that will become a part of ACHD's 5-year work plan. ACHD generally scopes approximately 5 of the submitted projects after the items that have already been determined to be a yes project or a goal project is what they call it. By ACHD. Last summer, ACHD scoped several items on the community programs. Under the community programs category, those items are 6 through 13 on the priority list. And I did review the scope report, and it appears all of those items will be added to the GO project list, and some of them will probably be combined. The transportation committee members reviewed this, including Councilman Council Member McPherson. I've also worked with the school district to include their priorities on the city's list to keep the children of CUNA safe. I'll stand for questions.
Okay, questions for Wendy.
I have one. I think just one. It seems like 6 and 7 are conflicting.
Could be.
6 asks for a roundabout at Deer Flat and K, and then 7 asks for a traffic signal or a left turn lane from K onto Deer Flat.
Well, they're both put there for a reason. The roundabout is frankly not likely to happen.
Okay.
Because I've been told that it does not meet warrants. However, that is the preference to have happen.
Okay. So it's like, oh, we prefer this, and then if not this.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
On which list?
The road and intersection.
Okay.
Page 3 of 7. Is that Ada County out there? More? Jenna Moore Road and Cole Road?
It is mostly Ada County. However, with our ACI now expanded, the boundary, and our industrial area going out there, theoretically going out there between South Cole and South Pleasant Valley Road. That piece of road is in desperate need for repair to sustain truck traffic. And it is currently, and that, I believe that's already been approved by ACHD. Yeah. And I believe it's currently a D? A level of service D.
Okay. I would have thought that 5 and 6, which are in the city limits, would have priority over something.
When it has been already approved by, well, it was included on, correct. Those ones won't be, they've already been scoped and have been prioritized. It's just the ones that fall in line after that, that they'll look at for new projects. And that was on our priority list, I believe, last year.
Wendy, on the community programs number 5, we talked about the enhanced pedestrian crossing at Swan Falls and Indian Creek. Is our goal, and I don't know if it's you or even Bobby, I thought our goal was to put a path underneath the bridge, the walkway. So is that still?
Yes, I believe that's still a go. Okay. However, like on Bridge Street, there's a pathway underneath,
yeah.
And then there's a ped. Enhanced ped crossing across the top.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to make sure. I guess. Yeah, answer that question. So thank you.
Okay. Further questions? And one thing we did this year was we tried very hard to make sure that our list and the school district's list matched. That's something that we haven't always been completely in sync with. We've always tried to include their comment, but this year we painstakingly made sure that they were one and the same to give them a little more credibility. So,
I move we approve resolution number R22-2017.
Second.
Motion is made to approve resolution number R22-2017. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I'm sorry, I forgot to say aye.
Motion carries. Consideration to approve resolution number R23-2017, approving award of bid to Cougar Construction Excavation for the 2017 PI project. Gordon Law.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, this is a budgeted project. It does include one additional item over what was originally budgeted, and that was a water main along Deer Flat and Highway 69 to take care of a low pressure area for fire protection. We received five bids. The reason I've asked for this to be a discussion item as opposed to being on the consent agenda is there's a considerable spread between the bids. And in particular, the spread between low bid and second low bid is 16%. If it had been 10% or less, I would have just put it on the consent agenda. My concern is that council has a chance to see this and ask any questions they wish about it. My recommendation is that the apparent low bid be awarded the contract. And with that, I will let council ask any questions they want about the variability in the bids and so forth.
Okay. Questions for Gordon? Yes.
Is Cougar a local firm?
They are. They have not done anything in the city of CUNA that I'm aware of. The principals in it are from the area. That's about all I can tell you about them. I don't have any history with them, I guess.
Are they familiar? They may hit a rock.
I think so. I don't know, but if you'll notice that there were two items where there was a, between the low bid and the second low bid, there were two items that were rather large disparity. One of them was the cost for rock, and the other one was the cost for repaving. Those account for $90,000 of the $56,000 difference in the bids. I think it should give us pause. But I don't know that that my recommendation changes.
Okay. I was asking if they were local because most excavation contractors that were aware of the rocks that the lava flows that we have here. If they hit the major lava flow, is there a contingency in the contract?
There's specifically an item for rock excavation. And each of the contractors has applied a unit price per yard of removed rock. In this particular case, the winning bidder, their unit price was substantially below most of the other bidders on this item. I will mention as a mitigating consideration is that oftentimes contractors who are confident about the existence or lack of existence of rock in an area we'll take that quantity that we put in without knowing what the quantity should actually be. We put a quantity in. They will actually come in and bid like I've seen bids for one penny per cubic yard removed, which is usually an indication of a bet by the contractor that he's not going to run into rock. In this particular case, there is another factor that needs to be considered, and that is the economic climate that we're in right now. What you tend to get when everybody is busy is a wide disparity in prices, oftentimes based on the idea that a guy will throw in or a contractor will throw in a bid just on the chance that everybody else is sleeping or everybody else is busy. So that tends to spread out the bids. We see that, and if you look at the unit prices, they're all over the board. So, I again, I think council and their fiduciary responsibility probably needs to at least have a chance to ask questions and talk about it. And I've made my recommendation, and I leave it to you to decide what we do from here.
They will have to secure a performance bond, won't they?
Yes, they will.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay.
Gordon, I assume they've done these types of scope of projects before.
That I'm not sure. Okay. I did talk to them, the low bidder.
No.
Again, I'm familiar with the folks. They've been in the construction business for a while, but this is a new firm name. They haven't done work for us before.
Okay. And then regarding the amount and the amount
Council
that...
Council Member Jones? Excuse me. I am online and checking. They do advertise that they come in on time and on budget.
Okay.
But they also have done the Arboretum at Barber Park, Ridgeview High Seminary Building, Idaho Expo Drainage, 15th, 16th Street Road Project, Skate Park, Popeyes and Meridian Road Skate Park, Holiday Inn Express, I'm just going through the Harris Ranch Pump Station, Sunny Ridge Subdivision, Cole Road Sewer Project, Amber Way, I mean, they go down, that's about halfway through the list. So the 5 mile sewer line trunk, including sewer services, Whitetail Resort, which is up in McCall, Hidden Springs Subdivision. So they do appear to have substantial projects that they've done in the area. Thank you.
And then regarding the bid compared to what the available funds are, I assume this is part of what you originally budgeted, or is this the whole project?
The amount for the PI portion, which is what I originally budgeted, is less than what was budgeted by a small amount. With the addition of the water main, that was going to be from redirected funds from the water tank and booster station that we decided not to do because the quality of the water. So that's where that's coming from. Combined together, it's slightly in excess of the amount that we had budgeted for the PI project alone.
So I guess my question is that this is we're in line with what you were thinking when you did the budget, and we're not just really low compared to what was planned.
The one that's closest is the low bidder.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. All right, thank you.
I move we approve resolution number R23-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R23-2017. Is there any further discussion? Yes.
If I could ask real quick. It looks like you're taking $200,000 out of the water fund and $150,000 out of PI for contingency. Am I reading that correctly?
I would revise the view of it. What I'm trying to convey by that chart at the very bottom is that there are adequate funds that have been allocated by budget in order to accomplish the work. I'm not saying we're going to do $200,000 of this project with that, because really the water portion is only about $50,000 of it. I'm just saying there's plenty of money available.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Gordon. Mayor and Council discussion items. Discussion of use of the City Hall parking lot. Is that what you had?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to follow up. I don't believe that we've set what we are going to require fees or anything like that for the use, and I know we've talked about it, but I don't recall if we have agreed on if there will be a charge to use it, if there won't be a charge to use it. And I was just trying to feel what the other council members wanted to do so we get something set in place so for any future events coming in, we have a of what we're doing.
Okay, we did actually have a discussion on that and come up with a formula as to how to figure what that would po-
possibly we were. If Chris, you can expand on that.
So, yes, Richard, Bob, myself, the mayor, we met, reviewed the cost for the parking lot, broke that out to an event on based on space. So on March 21st, we'll bring forward a recommendation and a public hearing for council to consider. Basically, it will outline what spaces can be rented, which would be $50 for the parking lot this way, and then $50 additionally if you wanted both sides, and then to allow parking to stay open for public access to the green belt. So that'll be up for council consideration on the 21st. But that would be for special events, the ones that qualify for a special event plan, which with the changes that were approved by council, everything's in place to take care of an event with a special event plan for the city parking lot. It'll be the fees for council's consideration at that point. That does not include the potential for mobile vendors to use the parking lot. That is another discussion that would need to be held based on council direction. If you want us to look into that and come back with what maybe we can see based on the code that's in place, which says right now you have to leave. You can't stay there overnight. You have to leave. And as council member Boobin Vonderhaar said previously, how do you decide? Do you do a lottery as to who can park? How long can they be there? What fees are applicable? Those kind of things. So that's probably a bigger conversation, I think, that needs to be had, and maybe with council direction to be reviewed by staff and come back with that information for council to look through.
And is there any time frame of when that will be done?
If council would like, we can start on that within the next, we can try and get it. Maybe not by the 21st, but we could try and get to the meeting after that based on staff availability. Bob's currently out on surgery, so we would want to wait till he's able to participate and help with some direction on that as well.
Is that something that council feels that we should probably have in place before we allow the rental or temporary vendors coming in, especially regarding choosing of what vendors are allowed and based on lotteries and stuff like that? Or
so if I'm understanding correctly, we do already, from last meeting, there's been discussion and there now is a plan in place to deal with requests to use a parking lot for special events and the fees associated with that. But the question that has not yet been answered relates exclusively to mobile vendors. Are you saying you think both of those need to be answered before we can sign off on either, or?
No, I mean, I have no problem if the setting up the fee based on a special event for special events. I don't know if it's something that if somebody privately wanted to come in and rent the parking lot, I don't know if anybody would. I mean, I don't know if that's, not saying they wouldn't, but I mean, I'm not saying that, I don't know if that's something somebody would do. So whether or not that would be the case, if it's going to be a charge like the band shell or the gazebo. And then also, if we are going to allow temporary vendors in, how are we going to resolve if multiple vendors want to come in at the same time, yet we won't allow all those vendors in at one time? How do we choose which vendors get to have that space? And then also regarding the notification of the public that that space is available to be rented. Some may not even know that the parking lot is available to do a temporary vendor. So that's what I was looking to find out, the clarification of how we will proceed with that, if that makes any sense.
So, Councilmember Jones, we staff can put together some information on the mobile vendors specifically. So if a snow cone wants and a hot dog stand want to come in to the City Hall parking lot, when can they do that? I will say we have had some superficial conversations based on previous experience we've had with city property and mobile vendors, why we've had to make some changes, and would they be able to set up during business hours? Would that need to be non-business hours so that they weren't interfering or blocking the parking lot? How many of them then becomes a special event plan, addressing gray water needs, electricity, those kind of things? versus if somebody brought in a special event and said, I'm having from this time to this time, I'm having snow cones and hot dogs and cotton candy and popcorn, and it's a like a food truck rally or a food event. So I think that staff could put together some information for council to consider as far as mobile vendors using the city hall parking lot and what the associated fees may or may not be with that.
Yeah, I'd be all right with that. I mean, my biggest concern is that if we are going to open up, that we somehow allow everybody the equal opportunity to have a chance of getting that, and that's where my bigger concern is.
I think that would, you know, I mean, it would follow the protocol that council's laid out, and that's, you know, request for information or proposal.
And the answer to my questions.
Okay, and then discussion of the possible implementation of special event fees. Did that?
I would assume that's Chris. I assume after I know Chris and I have talked about this for several years regarding special event fees, and that's something that also you're looking into bringing to us at some point of what those fees would be.
I discussed it with the mayor, and I did let the mayor know I was going to make this request for consideration, and that is to take another, I want to call it a special event cycle, so maybe this next year. I can tell you now, based on last year, how, you know, what the cost is. You know, there's a basic time frame that we need to process any, and then based on the number of people on top of that. But some changes were made in the special event plan, which could reduce the amount of time or efforts that we need to put into it, such as tracking down ACHD permit and all that type of thing. I would ask the council maybe give me another year to evaluate the investment of time to do the permit itself so that I can bring forth an accurate estimate of our time allocation. But if council wants something prior to that, then certainly I can put those numbers together.
I mean, the only thing I would be interested in is obviously I am concerned about staff time. I also don't want to implement fees that would deter. Especially for an event that is not benefiting monetarily. I just and I've stated this before. I'm concerned that we charge a food vendor to set up as a mobile vendor, but we do not collect any fees for a mobile vendor setting up during a special event. I know previously when I was coordinating CUNA days, when I originally came in here, before we had special event fee, I was paying in excess of probably $900 for 85 vendors who were paying $15 a piece. That I think that the opportunity to still collect that has been missed. And I just think that if there's a benefit being made off of city property monetarily, that I think it should be at least discussed and looked at. So I don't know if that helps any.
Okay. That brings another one, the Easter egg hunt. I think typically in the past there's not been I don't think they've set up for a special event, have they, for the Easter egg hunt? And then
once.
Okay, and then beyond that, the city always makes a donation to that. What is council's preference on what we want to see from the Easter egg hunt before we give out that money? I think in the past we just give that money out for that event, and from what I've seen and heard, it seems like we would want some type of receipts to show where the money's being spent and that type of thing, just for due diligence. I don't think that's creating an extra burden on the person that's putting together the event. I wouldn't think so, but it just kind of cleans up our books better and makes it look more.
Have we ever asked for a receipt for like the fireworks or CUNA days or anything?
Yeah. Councilmember Bouvin Vonderhaar, we do get a receipt from Fireworks America for the purchase.
As long as we're being consistent and not, you know, holding anybody to a higher standard, I think that's fine.
Yeah, and I think the question is just because we do that for some and not the others, and so I just want to create a consistency here, and I don't think it's going to create any extra burden because it can be, you know, I think in the past they've spent the money and used the money to pay their credit card bill, which really doesn't matter as long as we get a receipt in the AMP. So I don't think it's going to create a burden. I certainly don't want to create a burden on the Easter egg hunt. I don't want to kill the Easter bunny. But
The one thing I'll mention is, if I recall from hearing presentations about it before, they do frequently use collected monies to hit the immediately after Easter sales. So depending on if receipts might be slightly delayed, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. depending on how they're using the money we give them and that sort of thing. Like, it wouldn't necessarily be they spent the money and then we reimburse them. I don't know exactly when we give them the money, but anyway, I just thought I'd mention it.
I kind of do, and I think that's okay as long as we're getting a receipt for something. I don't think the date on the receipt matters so much as just being able to keep in our books that we're giving the funding for a particular reason and for a particular product. And
that makes sense.
I'm kind of curious,
John.
You get a receipt for the fireworks. How do you know all the money is being allocated to fireworks?
We don't necessarily track the money. And we know that they have spent money, an allocated amount that we have budgeted for a pre-acquisition of fireworks, but we don't. I mean, that extends to the question the mayor is talking about. Do we want to go to the extent of saying we'll donate, but we'll make the purchase and donate the product to you, or do you want to just have them purchase the product and take their word and take a receipt so that we substantiate there was an actual purchase made?
My preference would just be to get receipts, because it just takes – it's one more thing that we would be asking staff to do in terms of, like, actually making the purchases and that sort of thing. And as long as we have a receipt that shows the amount we donated was spent on something we approved for a donation, I think that's good enough for me.
So when the city receives funds, grant funds, we have to do that. We have to show the actual invoice, what we paid with the funds. And oftentimes when we get audited, we have to show the check we used and, you know, I mean, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I don't think it's out of the norm for when money's granted out or gifted out to just ask to see the copy of the paid invoice of the details or has a description of what it was spent on.
Can I throw it?
That's where we were talking about. It doesn't matter so much. It doesn't have to be a receipt dated before Easter. It could go to the next one, or I think, like she said recently, she was out purchasing stuff this year yet. So,
right.
I mean, I don't think we care about the dates so much as the receipt showing that things were purchased for that. And I think it just cleans things up when John goes through an audit and they ask for particular receipts. I mean, it's certainly up to council. That's why I brought it up, because this is really the only one hanging out there that we don't get any receipts for. So.
And I understand that, but I'm just saying if you make it too difficult, you're going to see people just walk away and say it's not worth it.
Sure, and that was my point, is I don't want to kill the Easter Bunny here. I just want to make sure that we're covered. So.
Well, and I would assume, I mean, receipts for the products are easy to produce, but I think one thing you're alluding to perhaps is are we asking her to, like, take pictures of her odometer at various points? You know, are we asking for gas receipts? And I don't think it's anything that far. I think to the extent her receipts don't add up to the $2,000, and she's saying, you know, part of this was mileage and going between the stores, I would be fine with just a statement from her that says, you know, I certify that, you know, that this, the following information is true and correct to the best of my ability, and just kind of noting, you know, I went to X stores, I, you know, approximately this many miles. And, you know, we could work it out on our end, like what's the IRS reimbursement rate kind of a thing, and be able to calculate out what the cost associated with that would be. So, like, I think I certainly agree with what I think I hear you saying in terms of we want to make sure we're covering ourselves in terms of documentation, but also not making it so onerous that it becomes overly burdensome. So I'm hoping that between receipts and, like, maybe just certified statements, not that they have to be notarized or anything, but I think that might help cover, like, any of the harder things to document, if that makes sense.
I think when we get merchants that donate their time like that, they're taken away from their productivity. They either have to work late to make up for it, or on a Saturday or Sunday. And I think most of the merchants end up putting money out of their own pocket. And then when we make it so difficult, they just say, to hell with it, it's not worth it. That's when you run into a problem. Because I know people come from out of town for the Easter egg hunt here, and the school's been very accommodating to the Browns. But I know we get there sometimes 7 o'clock in the morning for the 10 o'clock. So I'm just guessing there's got to be 25 people, John, that are there for 3-4 hours donating their time. And the city gets a benefit of the publicity. I know where you're coming from, accountability, but don't skin the rabbit because it's Easter trying to have something to eat. You've got all the kids and the toys. Make it as simplistic as possible, John.
And I agree with that. The point here, though, is that right now the way this stands is either John's liable or I'm liable or both of us are liable for giving out money where there's no receipts, and that's the only time we do this. So that's why I want council's discretion on this. If council is fine with giving out the money without receipts, then that's fine. It's a liability standpoint where we have to be held accountable for what we're doing, and I'm good with either.
Unfortunately, I feel like Pat probably has experienced this before, where it's like people assume, you know, oh, well, Pat's running CUNA Days, so he must be pocketing a bunch of money from it and stuff. And so I think this helps, too, with us being able to conclusively refute any allegation that anybody associated with the Easter egg hunt is somehow personally benefiting from it. I mean, anybody involved with it knows that's not the case and understands the amount of work that goes into it, but it's really easy for people to, you know, armchair quarterback and assume the worst and stuff. So I think this adds that extra layer of just being able to prove everything's on the up and up, and everybody involved is, you know, just doing what they're supposed to be doing and that sort of thing.
So are you and John saying you don't want to go to jail alone? Because I think Briggs will.
Mm-hmm. I'll hang out for a couple days, tops. So that's it.
So what's the answer? What are you looking for?
I'm just looking for would council be more comfortable if we ask for the receipts, or would council? I mean, we just haven't before. That's why I'm trying to get council's discretion here.
My preference would be that we treat everybody equally.
and nobody gets special treatment. So if we're requiring receipts from everybody else to whom we donate money, then I think it's fair that we require that of everybody, with the notation that because of the unique way the Easter egg hunt is run in terms of some things being purchased like a year in advance and that sort of thing, that what we get the first time, if it's the first time we're ever asking for it, may be a little piecemeal. I mean, I think it's totally reasonable that she may not have kept receipts from April 2016, mm-hmm. expecting that she was going to need to produce them, that sort of thing. So, yeah, so that would be like my one caveat, that the first year we might be able to accept something less than what we would expect going forward, and we just kind of give that transition period because it's the first time we're asking.
And yeah, so in the first year, I would have no problem with handing out the check and then getting receipts back, as long as so money she spent this year can add to that, and then money she spends after Easter to buy the pre-sale stuff can go with this year's receipt also. It really doesn't matter the date on the receipt, because I don't think we're looking for that. It's like buying fireworks. Doesn't have to be on 4th of July. It can be on CUNA days or 10 days later, whatever the thing is. And actually, fireworks are purchased in January so that we get twice for the price of one. And so I don't think the date is the issue as much as just having some type of auditable receipt. So that's kind of all this is about. So it certainly is not to pick on anyone. It's just kind of to clean up the books, so to speak. So because I personally do not want to sit out there and do all the work they do, putting the candy in those little Easter eggs for hours on end.
Oh, it's not that. Yeah, they do
it. Mayor, if I could add real fast, I appreciate Brianna's comment about me profiting from CUNA days, but I do real say that I appreciated the fact when the day came that the city was started to issue the check directly to Fireworks America, not to the CUNA days committee.
Sure.
I think that did clear up hopefully some of those potential allegations. I don't think that the coordinator of the Easter egg hunt probably will not have a problem asking for receipts. If we can give a little leeway, like you said, as far as the dates, mm-hmm. and maybe a little bit of leeway to help if she would like to claim some time or expenses to put on the event as far as any type of a facility cost or something like that, where it's not just necessarily product itself. Because,
right.
I mean, I think the same with the fireworks. There's no way to say that the money for the fireworks goes to fireworks directly and not to any staff time of the of that company. So,
I think that's fine, and I think the money is for the Easter egg event rather than just candy.
Yeah.
So that I get, it just kind of cleans things up, and bless her heart, she's been doing this for I don't know how many years, and so that's why I was even nervous about bringing it up, is because I certainly don't want to make it sound like I'm picking on anybody here, but it just is an audit type of question, and you know how that works with the city, is we have to be accountable, and I don't want to leave John hanging out on a limb and that type of thing. So that's where it came from. We certainly can be as lenient as you want, or like I say, if council's okay with it, we don't have to ask for a receipt. It's whatever council wants to do.
Well, I would like to side on the side of being consistent, so whatever it takes to be consistent and how we get there, the length of time it takes to get there, obviously the sooner the better for me, but I don't, if that's what we're going to look for, I really don't necessarily think there's going to be that big of a problem. So.
Okay.
Well, the donation is for a particular purpose. So essentially what we just need to do is just make sure that it's being used for that particular purpose. So What we don't want to do is say council designated $2,000 for the Easter egg hunt. The person we donated to, and this is a completely hypothetical situation, uses it to go on vacation. If something like that ever happened, you know, certainly that would make the media, that would put a negative connotation on the city. And we just want to make sure we're being very transparent. This is the only thing.
I see where you're coming from, John, but I guess my next question is, do we hold everybody accountable that we make a donation to for receipts?
Yeah, there are only two, Fireworks America via the Community Days and Easter Egg Hunt. Yeah.
Well, if everyone is good with that, that's the direction we'll go, and then.
Are you the one that's going to communicate with Sherry?
Sure. Yeah. Well, she'll come in to pick up the check. So yeah. No, I really don't think she'll have a problem with it. We certainly aren't picking on it, but that was. That's why I didn't really want to do this publicly, but we have to do this publicly, so that's it. But she's like I say, bless her heart, she's been doing this for I don't even know how many years, and like I say, I certainly don't want to be the one doing it, so I give her all the credit in the world for that. So,
well, I think Councilman Cardozo's concern is on all of our minds, because that's the last thing that I would want to do is make it difficult for somebody to do something in the city, and then they either don't do it or stop doing it. So
right.
I think that the staff and mayor, I think you do realize that. So, I mean, I appreciate that, and I think you will handle it accordingly. And
okay.
I have no problems with that. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Our new engineer will be arriving on April 5th. To begin the transitional period with Gordon.
We just approved a project. Gordon's got to stay till that's done.
We did discuss at Gordon's final meeting, we're going to have a segment called Gordon's Final Thoughts, and he's going to be free to say whatever he wants on the way out the door. So, I think he said Wendy was going to write it for him, though. And then one other thing that this has been brought up before, and Richard brought it up here again the other day, is council interested in looking at a reduction on the water usage gallon per month minimum?
Yes.
Is that something we're still interested in doing?
Yes. It is for me at least.
We can start the process of looking into that. I don't know.
This year, everybody's going to say, why are you looking at it? But there's years when 10,000 gallons per household is quite a bit. If you were down in Arizona, some areas allocate 3,000, anything above that, you're charged over and above that. But that's Arizona. But in order to entice people to be more
conservation minded.
Yeah.
I, just of interest, and this isn't because I'm hoping to save on my water bill, but I looked at my bill the other month because I was also looking at my tenants, and I realized that in the 30 months I've been in my house, we've used 50,000 gallons of water in 30 months. But technically, I mean, that's what we're allowing people to use in 5 months. And so I think there are a lot of, there's certainly people who use the full allocation, and there's certainly people that don't, and I think, you know, if we can look at our how we charge for water and see if we can stick to, I mean, I want to make sure that our expenses are covered and that we're charging a fair rate. And maybe that means that we still end up with about the same cost for 10,000, and people who use less than that might see a discount. Maybe that's not how it ends up panning out, but I'd like to look at it at least to see, because we do live in a desert. And this was something that was brought up, I know, during the candidate forums and stuff, somebody specifically brought it up and, you know, was really curious why we are so generous with how much water people get kind of as the base amount. So
I think it's worth looking at. Whether it ends up changing or not is kind of a whole different question. But
so what we'll do is we'll just kind of start the process. We'll see what other cities around us are doing and that type of thing. And you know, I don't know how much cost adjustment we could do based on we have to have, like you say, the money. We still have to have the operating costs. So I don't know. We can kind of just start the process, see what it takes, and if it gets really complicated, then we will ask you for further direction and go from there. So.
I think the more we progress to PI and get off potable water, the more it gives us an argument to lower that usage. If you were to do maybe 500 per year for a couple of years and get it down to 8,000, I don't know if you would hear very much blocking for the public at 8,000, to be honest with you. Even without a price for just the fact that we're conserving water, if nothing else.
So. Well, and not to muddy this at all, but maybe part of this discussion should be whether we can do any sort of a level pay thing. Like, I know we already spread the irrigation assessment out, but I'm just thinking in terms of, like, if there are months where we feel like people would be inclined to use more water, and if there would be a way that we would be able to average out their bill based on prior, I mean, kind of like Idaho Power does and Intermountain Gas and stuff. I don't know if it'll even be necessary, but just to the extent that becomes a thing or is like an interesting way that we could maybe do some sort of a credit at the end. So rather than lowering rates, like maybe you get a credit if after a year or 6 months or whatever you've used an average of X per month, or I don't know, just something else to think about.
You get to come to the Easter egg hunt for free.
Yeah. You can think about that, John D. Crean.
Do we have the capability to find the average usage for our homes? And our possible intention is either to lower the amount that you're given for our rate, or possibly even lower the rate to create a separate tier for lesser usage.
Sliding scale.
Yeah. So I just don't know if that's what you're looking at, or are we just looking at to change the.
I think everything's on the table.
Okay. I just didn't.
Yeah. I mean, because certainly factoring in what is average usage. But also, yeah, I mean, if there's like a good chunk, if like 30% of households use less than 3,000 gallons a month, and then 50% use, you know, several thousand gallons more, I mean, there's just lots of different ways we can look at it and ways we can approach it and stuff, so.
Okay. Well, we'll start that process a little bit and see where we can get with it. Bring you back what we find. And that is all I have. Does anybody else have anything they want to talk about? One other thing I guess I would like to say is if during a meeting someone makes a motion, someone makes a second, and I forget to ask if there's any further discussion, please always feel free to hop right in there, interrupt, and ask for more discussion. I don't mean to do that if I do, but I'm sure that occasionally I get ahead of myself and do that, so I certainly will try not to, but certainly don't ever feel that you can't interrupt me at any time, and certainly don't want to mess with anybody's process or right to have discussion here, so. And that's kind of all I have for tonight, so. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to discuss?
Nope.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.